Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Here in the Bay Area, where the high cost of living makes it challenging for teachers to make ends meet, a nationwide teacher shortage is being felt even more acutely. Every year, principals scramble to fill the classrooms with qualified teachers. Contributing to the problem is that enrollment in teacher credentialing programs in California has declined by 75% over a recent 10-year period. There are simply fewer and fewer people going into the teaching profession. Our panelists tonight, along with many others, are working hard to understand and reverse this trend. And by the way, if you've ever entertained the idea of becoming a teacher, this might be a good time to do it. And what can be done to better prepare those would-be teachers and support them so that they stay in their careers? And how are local school districts trying to recruit and retain the teachers that they manage to hire? And come September, will Bay Area students have the teachers they need at the head of their classrooms? Joining me in the studio tonight to discuss these issues and more are Tara Kinney. She's Director of State Policy at the Learning Policy Institute in Palo Alto. Welcome, Tara.
Thank you.
We're also joined here in the studio by Daniel Menezes. I tried that. Chief of Human Resources for the San Francisco Unified School District. Welcome, Daniel.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
And by phone, we're joined by two guests. Tina Sloan, she's professor at the Gurvitz Graduate School of Education at UC Santa Barbara. She's also a commissioner on the California Commission for Teacher Credentialing. And she is additionally the director of the California Teacher Education Research and Improvement Network. Welcome, Tina.
Thank you, Joseph. Sorry for the long introduction.
That's fine. And we're also lucky to be joined by a student. That's Armand Matthew. He's a rising 12th grader at Oakland High School. Welcome, Armand.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we, of course, ask you to join in as listeners to our conversation this evening. We'll open our phone lines in about 20 minutes, and the number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And, of course, you can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment at the KLW website, or tweet us at KLW. Yeah, City Visions. At KLW. Sorry. That's our Twitter handle. All right. So I wanted to start with you, Armand. Thanks for being with us. What's it been like for you when you've walked into a classroom at the beginning of a school year? Have there been times when you weren't sure if the teacher was going to show up?
Well, I feel like it really depends on, like, you know, the environment of your school, the environment of, like, your classroom. Like, if it feels like it's a, I wouldn't say, like, I've had that experience on my first, you know, day of school, but I have, like, later on in the year, like, in the first couple weeks, et cetera. Like, you do start getting that feeling of, like, is the teacher going to come today? Like, you question if they're really, like, planning on continuing staying in your classroom.
Mm-hmm. So what kinds of classes have you noticed that, if at all, if there's, like, a type of subject where you're noticing it's harder to be sure that the teacher's going to be showing up to teach your class?
I mean, I've had an experience myself with my freshman year in my English class.
And are there other subjects that your peers are saying that they're having a hard time getting a teacher to teach them?
Yeah, I feel like it's like more of the elective classes and the more like scientifically based classes. Like, I feel like those are like really the subjects that have like a more of like teacher shortage in those areas.
Hmm. And so what's it like for you to try to study a subject when there's not a teacher there right away, or when a teacher does come, is that teacher the right fit for the subject?
Well, for a lot of the time, you know, in my, like, experiences, there aren't teachers who teach the subject that I want to actually be in, like, ethnic studies and social justice classes. But, not teaching like that certain like that specific subject. Next year, in my senior year, we won't have a teacher specifically trained for my AP Environmental Studies class because the original teacher wants to teach another subject of science. So the teacher that we'll have is originally an AP Bio teacher, and this will be his first year teaching some type of environmental studies. As far as we know, this is like his first time ever teaching some kind of environmental studies class, so he wasn't trained in this type of, you know, subject.
Is that something you're hearing from your friends, that they are being taught by teachers who don't necessarily have the experience teaching the subject matter that they're being assigned?
Yeah, like even like when they like describe their lesson, things like that, you can tell how like it was like the teacher doesn't always have like a great grasp on the things that they're teaching themselves.
And so what's that like to be in a classroom like that?
Well, I mean, like, it makes it, I think, and like, it makes it harder as a student because, like, you are not only, like, being taught, but you're being taught as the teacher learns, like, themselves. So, like, a lot of the times, like, a lot of the times, you know, when time comes for, like, testing and things like that, you won't always know if you're fully prepared because you won't know if all the information that you taught is the information that you need.
I see. So it leaves you wondering if you're getting all the education that you sounds like you're really hoping to get.
Exactly.
So, what's your take as a student? Why do you think this is happening? Do teachers talk to you about this, or have you found out like why it's so hard to get the right teachers in the classrooms to teach the subjects that they were trained to teach?
Well, yeah, I do. I've had talked to like some of my teachers who I have like, you know, a strong relationship with. And I feel like a big thing that makes it hard for teachers to stay is that like his support in their classroom and like with their fellow staff, and also like the cost of living and like, you know, like how hard it is to like work in a district where you're not trained to deal with students with different backgrounds, like broken households and different, you know, like mental experiences that have shaped who they are now. Like not everyone is trained to work in that type of environment. So it really like pushes people away sometimes.
So it sounds like the teaching environment itself and the preparation the teachers come with, they don't necessarily match, and that the cost of living can be pretty high.
Yeah.
That makes it really hard for teachers to stay. What do you think as a student that school districts, your principal, you know, the powers that be, what should they be doing to help with this problem?
Well, I feel like to like support and attract more teachers, like not only the obvious reason of like raising pay, but also providing like training and teaching skills for teachers with like support for educational needs. Like I know a couple teachers who are leaving to pursue higher education, and then also like support with classwork needs, like the teacher's aid, so like the teacher's workload won't be as heavy as it usually would because they have someone who's taking on part of it and helping them like, you know, work throughout the classroom. So like the teacher's aid and stuff, things like that would be like really like support a teacher.
So you're starting 12th grade in the fall. Do you know what profession you're going to go into?
I want to go into medicine. I want to be a surgeon.
Good for you. Did teaching ever cross your mind?
No. My mother is a teacher, and she says she wouldn't trade teaching anything else for like she wouldn't trade teaching over anything else for the world. But I've never really found a passion in like teaching myself.
All right, but it sounds like you have a role model that can inspire perhaps other people who might be listening tonight to become teachers. I want to thank you, Armand Matthew, a rising 12th grader at Oakland High School, and thanks for joining us and sharing your comments with us tonight.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right, so I want to turn now to my guests that remain with me, the panelists that will help us unwrap some of the comments that Armand made. I'll start with you, Tara Kinney, from the Learning Policy Institute. How on target was Armand in terms of the issues that we face as school districts across the nation and across the state when it comes to teacher shortages?
Armand was absolutely on target. One of the things I heard him say is, you're being taught as the teacher learns themselves. And we're seeing that increasingly happening across the state. Those teachers who are learning themselves on the job, who are not entering the profession fully prepared, the numbers of those teachers in the state have increased by more than 600% over the last 5 years. Those are teachers on emergency-style permits. And in his district, Oakland Unified, we're seeing those numbers dramatically increase. And the shortages are worse in special education, math, science, and bilingual education. So he talked about experiencing the science teacher shortage, and he wants to grow up to be a surgeon. But every one in two new math and science teachers in the state are entering the field without full preparation for math and science teaching.
So that says a lot about, you know, what our future is going to look like if we're having such a struggle at this stage. This might be there might be obvious answers to this question, but maybe to lay it out, how did we get here? Why are we in this problem to begin with?
Yeah, so there's a confluence of factors happening. You mentioned at the start of the hour the dramatic decline in teacher preparation enrollments in California, which are down more than 70% since 2002. So fewer folks entering the profession on the supply side of things. On the demand side of things, as California has recovered from the Great Recession and districts have put back the classes and programs that they cut dramatically during the recession, that means hiring more teachers. So there's a greater demand for new teachers. And then another big driver of our shortages is high rates of teacher attrition. About 90% of the demand for new teachers nationally is created by teachers leaving, and a big chunk of that, two-thirds of that, are teachers leaving before they hit retirement. So Armand talked about the cost of living, lack of collegiality or support from their school administrator or their other colleagues, lack of preparation for teaching, and all of that drives high teacher attrition rates. So those three factors are really have led us into a really major shortage across the state of California.
And how does this compare to the rest of the country?
Many states are feeling teacher shortages across the country. California is feeling it particularly bad.
And Tina Sloan, you're with the mm-hmm. Gurvitz Graduate School of Education at UC Santa Barbara, mm-hmm. and you're a commissioner on the California Commission for Teacher Credentialing. From your perspective as a researcher in education, tell us what other factors you see as contributing to this, or ways to understand why we got into this mess as to begin with.
Sure. Well, I think the teacher supply piece, you know, over the last 10 years, there have been, you know, numerous things in the media, you know, over time that have said teachers, you know, certainly during our recession, teachers are getting laid off from jobs. There are no jobs. And we get a big hype sort of in the media when around March, teachers get what we call pink slips, which, you know, districts, you know, and Daniel can talk about this a little bit better, but they're required to be able to say, you may not be hired back because it really depends on the number of students that we're going to have for your classes. So everybody sees that teachers are getting laid off, but they don't see that teachers get hired back as soon as they figure out, you know, how many students they have. So for a very long time, people have thought, well, there are no jobs. And I think the second thing that has happened is that teaching has become a very demanding profession. It always has been, but there are so many changes in the education field, particularly around things like using data for understanding where your students are and where they need to go. So teachers are really required to know how to look at both standardized exams and their classroom exams and their district-wide exams and really come up with a plan for how to move forward. And districts are really trying to help teachers learn how to do that. The problem is, in the U.S., our teachers have more what we call sort of face time with students than in most other OECD countries. So we're not giving teachers the time out of the classroom to really do the analysis of what their students are learning and where they need to go, as well as their own learning, the way other countries are doing. And I think this is why we're seeing a lot of attrition in our field as well. Teachers are feeling just overwhelmed. And then we have these new standards, Common Core Standards, and in California we have new assessments, These are all things that are leading or will be leading towards, you know, better prepared students. But it's a change, and it's a change that really requires teachers to have the ability to learn how to teach in these new ways, learn what these new assessments mean. It's an exciting time, too. I mean, I think that's the message. But at the same time, it has really led teachers to feeling overwhelmed and leaving the profession, I think.
And Armand mentioned something in passing that teachers are not only underprepared or unprepared for the subject matter that they're teaching, but they're unprepared to step into the school environment and the social milieu that the students bring with them, especially if they're not from the same don't have the same life experience or backgrounds. And there's been conversations about, you know, how the teaching profession is really about not just imparting the knowledge, but also helping students to navigate the challenges they come into the school with. How much of a factor do you feel like that is playing here?
Well, I think that is a very big factor. I mean, it's something that we grapple with in teacher education, both in how we can recruit teachers who are like the students in the communities in which they will serve. We have a situation in California where the demographics of our teaching force do not match the demographics of our student population. And students are feeling like their teachers don't really understand where they're coming from or what it's like to be in their communities. And there are a number of ways that we look at that in teacher preparation. You know, we have to be able to prepare people to work with students from all walks of life who have all sorts of ambitions and dreams, like Armand described. But at the same time, we have to be able to recruit more and more teachers into our profession who are like the students that they serve because they understand where they're coming from. And I think one of our biggest challenges is that to be really well prepared in teaching requires time, and that requires resources. And many people do not have the resources to spend in learning to do the work of teaching well, and it's a very difficult job.
So I want to bring Daniel Menezes from the San Francisco Unified School District into the conversation. You're the chief of human resources for SFUSD. Tell us about ground us in the local experience here of what it's like to fill classrooms with qualified teachers who then will stay on in the profession.
Yeah, so thank you for the question. You know, the truth of it is that it's been incredibly challenging. And so 2 years ago, in opening for, I believe it was the 16-17 school year, we opened with 94% of our classroom vacancy staffed, which meant that about 50 classrooms across the district started without a teacher in place, where we had to send a substitute, we had to find coverage, sometimes the principal had to cover. And so we have committed resources, we've committed strategic thinking, and we've really pushed the envelope to try to make sure that we open all of our classrooms staffed by the first day of school. And so luckily for us, last year we were able to come pretty close. We opened the school year with only about 4 vacancies, and those had all opened very close to the beginning of the school year. And this year we seem to be on track, but that really is the culmination of a lot of really intentional effort and a really intentional commitment of resources into teacher recruitment, because we know that all of the challenges that we just heard about are real. And what I would go further to say is that in San Francisco, I think we are feeling particularly squeezed by affordability. San Francisco has become an insanely expensive place to live. And when you're making a teacher salary, it's all the harder. And so that's something that we've had to grapple with as well. And we've made some significant moves in the last year to try to deal with that. But in a nutshell, it has been very challenging. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Tara Kinney, how much is affordability, meaning also salaries, a factor when you look at school districts across the state? Is it just a San Francisco problem?
it is by no means only a San Francisco problem, but it's, I agree, particularly acute in San Francisco. So research tells us that compensation is really important to recruiting teachers into the profession and also to retaining them there. And about 1 in 5 teachers who leave the profession cite financial reasons as a very or extremely important reason why they left. So it's a major driving factor. It's not the only factor, certainly. In San Francisco, though, and the Chronicle did some great reporting on this last year. They looked at the ratio of rent to salaries for the 115 largest school districts in the state, and San Francisco had by far the worst pay-to-rent proportion, and Oakland and Berkeley were right behind there. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a major factor. And when you think about the fact that the average or the median one-bedroom apartment rents for $3,500 in San Francisco, and the average starting salary is, what, about $50,000?
It's about 55 next year.
And even if you've been in the district for 28 years, you won't make three figures. So that's tough to raise a family on in San Francisco and pay your rent.
Hmm. So going back a moment to the topic of having teachers who are prepared or come from the same communities that their students come from, how much of the educational environment really is putting unnecessary pressure and responsibility on teachers to manage, in some cases, social situations that students bring that is really not meant to be handled by teachers, but should be met through other ways by society. I mean, we've heard about, you know, kids coming to school tired because they don't get enough sleep, or hungry because they don't come from a family that can afford to always put food on the table. And that sort of changes their ability to learn. Is it really a teacher's responsibility to handle all that?
Our social safety net is not holding all kids up, and schools are picking up a lot of that burden. I think we're seeing some really great models of schools stepping forward to do that. And San Francisco has some great models of community schools that are really providing services, you know, they call them wraparound services, right? So my child's school provides a food bank for families. We're talking about opening a shelter for families overnight because we have such a high proportion of homeless students at the school. So schools and teachers need to meet many needs of students. I think teachers enter the profession because they want to serve students and families. And if they get the quality support from their school principal and they make enough to live and they have the resources to do the job well and feel effective at what they're doing, they will stay. And that's what the research shows us.
And Tina, did you want to add something there about this? You know, where does the responsibility lie societally to help students be best set up to succeed when it's factors that are largely outside of what happens in the classroom that can affect their ability to learn?
Well, that is a really tough one. I mean, you hear about, I think one of the things that we have seen dramatically decline over many, many years are the additional support services that schools can provide for students. School psychologists, counselors, our school counselors have enormous loads in terms of the students they serve and try to help. And we simply haven't had the budget to be able to shore up those other services that our students need and teachers have needed to step in. Now, at the same time, we are seeing that where we need to go as a state is in a much more inclusive classroom environment where all of the adults who are serving our children have a better understanding of what each of them are doing. So we're really moving towards a system where what we call general education teachers are learning more and more about supporting students with particular socio-emotional needs, students with disabilities, students who are English language learners, et cetera. And that our support service staff, the school psychologists, the special education, you know, teachers, are also working in the general education environment together with everyone to support the students. But we're just really beginning this sort of radical change into these more inclusive environments. And then the fact remains that our students in schools do not have the necessary support that they need, that teachers tend to pick up, even with respect to supplies. I mean, we know that every year teachers are spending money, you know, in their own classrooms to provide supplies to their students. And we hear figures $500 to $1,000 on average each year. So we have a ways to go, but I think this is part of the reason why we're here.
So just to recap the first 20 minutes of our conversation, we're talking about teachers who are unprepared or underprepared for the teaching that they're doing, and because they're being asked to fill in on subjects that because of the shortage that they hadn't anticipated. They're also not necessarily fully supported in the classroom to deal with the socioeconomic and emotional issues that students bring in. Their salaries are pretty low, so it's hard for them to afford to continue to become a teacher in the first place or stay in the profession. And so it sounds pretty bleak. And so no wonder, right, that that less and less people are going into the teaching profession. And no wonder that perhaps our achievement gaps continue in this state and across the country. I say that so that we can just encapsulate what the problem is, and we're going to dive into what school districts and can do. But Tina, I want to stay with you for a moment, like. Where does this alarm get sounded on a larger scale? I mean, I think I've heard the refrain of how, you know, teachers are teaching is the most important profession, and yet it's the least valued in many ways. Are school districts going to be able to solve this problem and get themselves out of it? We'll hear about some solutions, but is it really going to get us to move in a direction that will really shift away from the crisis that we're facing right now?
Well, look, I think the very first thing that we have to consider are the people who want to become teachers. So until recently, I was director of the teacher education program at UC Santa Barbara for 14 years, and my favorite part of the job was every year when the new people coming in who wanted to be teachers brought this energy with them that was just astounding. I mean, these are people who are clearly not in it for the money. They're clearly not in it for the fame or even the respect. They're in it because they really want to make a difference in the world. So for kids, they want to make a difference for kids. So this is who we're starting with. This is who we're working with. And if we can support them to become really well prepared, we know that when we do that, they stay in the profession longer because they can feel effective with children. We hear over and over again, it's their ability to have some autonomy over their work. It's their ability to feel like they are able to make a difference. And that happens when they're well prepared. And their ability to be well prepared means that they need to be supported both financially and otherwise, both while they're in their teacher preparation programs and while they're in their districts, supported to do the work that they want to do. And we're seeing more and more, finally, financial support from our governor going into supporting people who want to become teachers with programs that are going to local education agencies like districts to say, here, figure out, here are some funds to recruit and retain these teachers and to really prepare them well. We've had things like loan forgiveness programs that have been very effective in helping teachers come into the profession. And what those do is they say, look, if you want to come into these programs and be prepared, we will forgive your loans over a period of X years, particularly if you work in a high-need school or a high-needs area like the sciences and the math and special education. Those programs are really helping these incredibly motivated individuals realize their dreams and what they can do for kids.
I want to reintroduce the program. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing the teacher shortage in California and the Bay Area with our guests, Tara Kinney, Director of State Policy at the Learning Policy Institute in Palo Alto, Daniel Menezes with the San Francisco Unified School District. He's the Chief of Human Resources there. And we just heard there from Tina Sloan. She's professor of the Gurvitz Graduate School of Education at UC Santa Barbara. We invite you, our listeners, to call in with your questions and comments. Are you a teacher or a parent who has been impacted by the teacher shortage? What do you think are possible solutions? The number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can email us now at cityvisions@klw.org or post a comment at the KLW website, or you can tweet us at City Visions KALW. So, Daniel Menezes, in our comments, or comments from Tara earlier, she was talking a little bit about the wraparound initiatives that are trying to bring services into the school that will help students succeed so that the burden is not just on the teacher's shoulders. Tell us a little bit more about the SFUSD's approach.
So we have a couple of schools that employ that model. That's actually a little bit outside of my area of expertise, so I could tell you a lot more about all the great things we're doing to try to recruit and retain teachers in the district. But my expertise isn't actually in the community service model. I do know that we're doing really great work at, for example, Buena Vista Horace Mann, which is a school that I think Tara used to teach at. And that's one of the many examples of some of that work in the district.
So Tara or Tina, can you say a little bit more about, you know, what it actually means to bring services into the schools in a way that we haven't done before? Tara, go ahead.
Tara, I'll let you do this one.
Sure. You know, I think Tina talked about the importance of school counselors, of, you know, adequate school principals to help support teachers. Just having so many assistant principal positions, for example, were cut during the recession and have not been put back. So there's just an adequate staffing across the board, the adults in the school working who are supporting children across their many needs. And then, you know, supporting families, the parents and guardians of children at the school to have their basic needs met so that their children can learn. But some of the other programs that we see most effective across the state for teacher recruitment and retention, Tina talked about loan forgiveness programs. California in the past has had a very successful loan forgiveness program. It was called the Apple Loan Forgiveness Program, but we haven't funded any new teachers in that program since the recession. The program was cut and we haven't brought it back. But the state has recently made some significant investments to address teacher shortages. So, for example, they put $45 million into the classified staff teacher training program in the state. So to support folks who are like the professionals or teachers' aides in the classroom, the people who are already working in schools who are typically from the community that they're teaching in and therefore more likely to stay, and providing financial support for those folks to get trained to be teachers in that same district. So that's been a great direction, is bringing a more diverse group of teachers into the profession. This year, last week, the state legislature passed a new state budget for California and put $125 million into addressing teacher shortages, and in particular in special education, as well as STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and bilingual education. And so that there's money there so that districts can design their own solutions that are really responsive to their local context, but also money for something called teacher residency programs. San Francisco has a great example of that. I'm sure Daniel will tell us more about it. But that's really modeled on a medical residency where a teacher candidate can spend a full year apprenticing, basically, with an expert teacher in the classroom from beginning to end of the school year. And those types of programs are the ones that really get at some of the issues that Armand raised at the beginning of the hour, of some teachers not really understanding the district or students that they're teaching in. When you train through a teacher residency program, you are being trained by the district that you're working with in partnership with a local institution of higher education. So it's a really quality model that the state is investing investing in, and it really pays off in terms of dramatically better teacher retention rates. So at the San Francisco program, 80% of those graduates are still in the district after 5 years, whereas for other new teachers, I think it's less than 40%.
We have a tweet from Anna who asks, can one of the panelists explain how schools get funded and if the rising property values will help schools with more taxes? Why are we so rich and our teachers so poorly paid? Who wants to take that one?
I can answer a little bit. Again, it's a little bit outside of my wheelhouse. I can tell you that I think the answer to the question about property taxes in San Francisco, at least, the rising cost of property here doesn't necessarily translate into revenue for the district. Some of that is the state formula for funding. Some of that are some local decisions. I'm not our chief financial officer, so I don't want to speak too far out of turn. But I can tell you that that's partially why we were so pleased to see a citizen-driven initiative on the ballot that just passed Proposition G, which will provide raises for our educators. So it's new and we're still unpacking it, but we're glad that the voters of San Francisco agree with us that we need more resources because our teachers deserve to earn a higher pay. So that was really nice to see.
Is this a Prop 13 problem, Tina Sloan?
Well, it started there. I mean, I remember being in elementary school when Prop 13 was passed and immediately felt the kinds of things that happened at that time. Suddenly, we didn't have the same amount of construction paper as we had before. So it's something that we have all, we've been sort of dealing with for a very long time. At the same time, there are other options for districts. So there's a state formula for funding, per pupil costs. And then there's another option that districts can adopt if they have particularly high property tax in their area, which is called a basic aid funding formula. And if the percentage of or the amount that you would get per pupil is higher with the basic aid formula, then districts will switch to that. And that may be what your caller is sort of talking about. I live in an area where property tax is very high. Why am I still seeing these problems in our schools? Well, in some schools, and this is actually a problem in our state, because we have some school districts that are funded much, much higher than other districts are based on these formulas. I will say at the same time, one way that our government has tried to give schools sort of more control over their funding is by changing the way that we fund schools with what's called a local control formula. And that has basically been about eliminating the categories that we used to put money towards, that sort of tied districts' hands. Saying, you can't spend this money on X, even though you really need to spend money on X because it's only allowed to be spent on Y. So now much more control is available to districts to say, look, for our kids in our community, this is where we really need to focus our resources. So I think that's helping in many ways, and it's also helped alleviate to some extent these huge disparities that we used to see between districts and the amount of money that they receive per pupil.
So I want to put the phone number out again. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing the teacher shortage here in California in the Bay Area with Tara Kinney of the Learning Policy Institute, Daniel Menezes of the San Francisco Unified School District, and Tina Sloan of the Gervitz Graduate School of Education at UC Santa Barbara. And our number again is 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. You can email us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment at the KLW website, or tweet us at cityvisionsklw. Daniel.
I just wanted to go back to something that Tara was speaking about earlier when it comes to residency programs, because over the last couple of years, we've launched a really exciting and kind of cool number of initiatives and programs that I feel like I'd be bereft if I didn't mention while I was on the air. So one of them is the San Francisco Teacher Residency, which is the program that Tara was talking about that has an 80% retention rate, where it is like a medical residency. And we are targeting actually math and science teachers and secondary math and science, to go back to the point that Armin made at the very beginning to make sure that they have a really strong sort of preparatory experience as they're entering the classroom. We've also kicked off a new residency program, which works much in the same way with NYU, New York University, so that's exciting. And we are also targeting math and science teachers for that, in addition to some other high-needs subject areas. And then one of the other things that we've done that I think is also unique is we've become our own credentialing agency. So we have a new program called the Pathway to Teaching. And we are basically running our own teacher credentialing program out of the district. You can apply to be a teacher with the district. There's a $5,000 tuition. And then you go through a really intensive sort of summer preparatory program before you go into the classroom and receive intensive coaching and support for 2 years. And we issue you the credential as a result of that. And part of why we think that's such an important model for us is that we don't think it's for everyone. We don't think that everyone could go through a program like that and come out successful, which is why we use that program as a career ladder. And we target, for example, our paraprofessionals who've been in the classroom for a long time, want to become a teacher, but may not be able to afford to enroll in a traditional graduate program. We have something that we're doing now in the district that is appealing to them. And so that's been really exciting, too. And I just wanted to mention, you know, in terms of how extraordinary the financial crisis or the affordability crisis is in San Francisco, that we as a district are actually building a teacher housing complex. So we've selected a developer. It's going to be built in the Francis Scott Key Annex in the Outer Sunset. It should be ready in the next couple of years, and we will literally have teacher housing, which is brand new territory for us and just a sign of the situation that we're in San Francisco and our commitment to do everything we can to make sure that we are able to continue to recruit and retain excellent staff for our students.
And this sounds great. Does San Francisco Unified also provide loan forgiveness?
We don't as an agency, but we are hoping that the state will pick back up the Apple Loan Forgiveness Program. And again, it just goes back to resources and what we have available.
And how long have these initiatives that you've just mentioned been in place?
So the San Francisco Teacher Residency has been around now for a couple of years. I want to say maybe 10. The New York Teacher Residency is in its first year, and Pathway to Teaching is in its second year. And then the housing complex, it hasn't been built yet, but we just selected the developer this year.
And how many units of housing will you have?
That is a good question. I think that is still being planned because one of the things we were looking at is what's the right ratio of studios to one bedrooms to two bedrooms based on the demographics of our educators. So that's one of the things being taken into consideration by the developers right now.
And so how long does it take? You mentioned this, the teacher residency has already produced an 80% retention, but how long do you think it takes to see the fruits of all this investment?
It depends on the program, right? So for teacher housing, that's going to take several years before we can even sort of cut ribbon on the property and start to see what effect that has for the teachers who end up living there. Whereas something like Pathway to Teaching, we launched last year. We have our first cohort. They've gone through their first year of teaching. There's about 90 of them. We are now taking on our second cohort, and we've seen really high interest and really high success. So that we know is paying dividends immediately. And I would say the same for our residency programs, that those are programs where we see a more sort of immediate impact, because they're helping us pretty quickly ramp up and get folks in the door who otherwise may not have been interested, at least in our district. So that's really exciting.
I want to get a couple of teachers on the line here. Let's go first to Renata. Renata, welcome to the program. Hello? Renata, are you there? All right. I don't know if we have Renata. Okay. Understand Renata's comment was that she was moving from Texas and looking for a job in the Bay Area and asking what are Bay Area schools or school districts looking for. So maybe this is a chance for you to give your pitch, Daniel.
Yeah, absolutely. So in SFUSD, first and foremost, we view education through a social justice lens. We like to say that we don't just talk the talk, we walk the walk. So being diversity driven, believing in social justice are our core values as a district. And first and foremost, anyone who joins the district, whether you're a teacher, a paraprofessional, an administrator, we want you to believe that too, and to sort of feel that education is a calling and that we have a job to do. And a lot of that is actually closing the achievement gap and making sure that each and every student in our district is successful. So obviously, that's kind of the first thing that we look for. We would love to have more and more experienced educators join our district, particularly to teach at some of our most underserved school sites. So we also value experience. But I would say that for us, the first pass is, you know, do you believe in social justice? Do you believe in education as a sort of a mechanism for social justice? And if so, then we would love to have you.
And what, and you talked about a lot of the front end or supports for new teachers. What kinds of needs do you see for mid-career teachers to keep them in the profession? Are those things that you're looking at as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that having access to high-quality professional development that moves your practice is really important. That's feedback we get all the time from our experienced educators. Having administrators who listen to them, having sort of teacher voice in decision-making is also really important. We have a strong union partnership in SFUSD, and so I think it's also really important to have, you know, a strong functioning union and that you have a partnership between the district and the union, that it's not always antagonistic. So I think all of those things are important. But I think the thing we hear the most from our teachers who have been here for a while is good PD, good administrator, and the ability to learn and grow in their profession and get feedback that helps them move their practice.
Mm-hmm. Could I add comment?
Yeah. Yes, Tina.
So this was something that I really think that we have to be thinking about as a profession, particularly as we're trying to recruit millennials to our work. I mean, we hear over and over again that, you know, this next sort of generation of people going into the workforce are going to expect to move in their jobs every few years. And what we haven't really done in teaching is create a career ladder that really supports the kinds of growth and opportunities, the kinds of things that Daniel just talked about, are incredibly important. And then we may need to go a step further too to say, it used to be that if you were a teacher and you wanted to advance, you know, the only place to go would be in administration, become a principal. Well, what about teacher education? How can we find ways to bring really experienced teachers into universities and colleges to do maybe maybe 2 years they spend really supporting new teachers going back into their classrooms to teach again, or maybe spending part-time in classrooms doing teaching, part-time on special assignments. We have more and more teachers that we call TOSAs, teachers on special assignment, who are supporting other teachers in their schools with, you know, developing technology or developing special education practice or whatever those things are. But I really think as a system, we have to figure out what are some options for the teacher career ladder.
And actually, I want to bring in our other teacher who's been waiting patiently. We have Jay-Z on the line. Jay-Z, welcome to the program.
You're not a regular teacher.
Hello?
Yes, I'm a substitute teacher, not a regular teacher.
Okay, so tell us about your experience and how this conversation mirrors that.
I've seen quite a few things. I've been a substitute teacher for the last 5 years, mostly on the East Bay. And some of the programs that they talked about, the one with SS State, you should be a little bit more forthcoming with some of the things that are involved with. Once you go through that program, is that you need to, Oakland has a similar program, Oakland Unified, where you have to work for that school for 5 years. So also if you want to change district, that teaching credential is accepted by other districts. Is it the same value as you're getting a teaching credential from Cal State East Bay? But there's a lot of things going on with education, and you're only scratching the surface because you have to get to touch on charter schools. If you read the East Bay Express, last week's issue, there's something going on with the Rise School buying some land so close to a public school, and the charter schools are draining the student population from the regular schools. You're just scratching the surface of what actually is going on in education. And as a substitute, you know, I have been a long-term substitute. I'm allowed to be a substitute to teach for 30 days, and I've done that about five times. I've taught eighth grade math, Spanish, American history, some science courses. It's unbelievable that education is such a revolving door. And like I said, you guys are just barely scratching the surface. I highly suggest that you read this article in the East Bay Express with regard with what's going on with the charter school at Oakland Unified. Even though you don't work for this school, you need to be aware. And any other comments? And it's a thankless job teaching. And it's a big makeover in general from parents and society in general. It's a thankless job, and And also one more thing, the teachers that have been teaching 20, 25 years, 30 years, I've seen this where they find a way to push these people out, and so they don't qualify to get the full retirement benefits, and that's some shady stuff that goes on. There's actually some principals that go to a certain place to get trained and know how to do these things, and that's why Oakland Unified is in such disarray, because the superintendent went somewhere. But anyway.
I'm going to have to cut you off there, though. But I really appreciate your comments, because they definitely brought in what we're talking about this evening. I wanted to pick up on one part of that, Tara Kinney. How are charter schools faring when it comes to teacher shortages, and what do you make of that ongoing controversy between charter schools and public schools?
So we haven't broken the data out as to how shortages are affecting charters versus non-charters. Shortages are affecting districts across the state, but some districts are feeling the impact of those shortages more than others. And I think it goes to some of the resourcing questions we were talking about earlier with respect to state funding. So, on the peninsula, Palo Alto Unified has one teacher on an emergency-style permit, whereas San Francisco Unified has hundreds. Oakland has hundreds, right?
And these are the permits that allow teachers to teach outside of their main subject area? Is that right?
These are individuals who are teaching in classrooms but haven't demonstrated knowledge of the subject they're teaching and haven't completed a teacher preparation program, completed their training to teach, or earned a full state credential. And they're a good signal of shortages, because when districts can't hire a fully prepared teacher, then they will turn to, they'll either, cancel the course if it's an elective, or increase class sizes, or hire an underprepared teacher. So the issue of teacher shortages is affecting some districts more than others, some schools more than others, and in particular, some groups of students more than others. So teachers on those emergency style permits are three times more common in high minority schools than in low minority schools, and twice as common in high poverty schools versus low poverty schools. And in special education, it's really just, it's a five-alarm fire. Two out of every three new special ed teachers in the state is coming into the classroom without training to teach special ed. And when you think about it, those are teachers who are teaching kids with autism, kids with severe emotional disturbances, kids who need the most qualified teachers who can handle their complex learning needs, and they're often being taught by a teacher who really knows nothing, literally nothing about that.
Which then, again, kind of keeps perpetuating the problem to begin mm-hmm. with. Tina Sloan, did you want to add anything there about this question about charter schools?
I can't really. I mean, the thing with charter schools is they're so wide-ranging, and we have charter schools that are, public sort of charters under districts, and others that are private. So it's sort of difficult to lump them all into one category and say charter schools are doing X, because charter schools themselves are so different as well. So I think, what Tara was saying is we're seeing this really across districts, all across the state, and there are, unfortunately, the children who need the greatest or the most prepared teachers are getting the least prepared teachers. And I don't know how that breaks out in charter schools versus non-charter schools.
Daniel?
I wanted to first say I think Tara hit the nail on the head with regards to everything that she just said. And for us, what that has caused is sort of a deliberate shift in strategy around our emergency credentialed teachers. I think in the past, maybe 10 years ago, you thought, oh, that's a problem. We need to try to find more teachers who have the qualifications we need. But what that's become for us is an effort to help emergency credentialed teachers become permanent teachers and get credentials. So we've targeted them pretty explicitly in the Pathway to Teaching program I was talking about before as sort of a ladder and a way of becoming a fully certified teacher. We're going to be investing significantly in test prep for our emergency credentialed teachers, because one of the things you have to do is to pass, I believe it's the CBEST, in order to become a certified teacher. And so we're also investing in helping those people do that and almost doing counseling along the way with our credentials team to make sure that all along the way we're helping them figure out all the things they need to do to become credentialed and then sort of pushing them to get there. And that is directly a result of what Tara just said in terms of the increasing numbers of teachers we have who are on those permits. But the other thing I wanted to say because I'd be irresponsible if I didn't. In response to that first question from Renata, is she and all of our other listeners who might be interested in joining the district should go to sfusdjobs.org. And there you can learn about becoming a teacher or any other kind of district employee because we share job openings across the board. So again, that's sfusdjobs.org.
That's great. So Tara and Tina, what kinds of questions are you posing or looking to get answered by the initiatives that we talked about tonight, whether it's loan forgiveness or teacher residency or the so-called Grow Your Own, where you give paraprofessional staff the opportunity to become teachers, housing subsidies, really shoring up not only the support, but making teaching a viable profession for people. What kinds of questions are you looking to have answered in the years that are ahead of us?
I'm really excited about those programs. I think we're already starting to see great results with the classified staff teacher training program, which was funded in the 2016 and 2017 budgets. Like I said, that program is bringing a much more diverse group of teachers into the profession and doing so quickly by really, what Daniel said, targeting folks who are paraprofessionals or classified staff, but who already have a BA and just need to complete the requirements for a teaching credential. The other thing the state has done recently is to invest in more four-year teacher preparation programs so that you can earn your BA and a teaching credential in 4 years. The state put $10 million into the budget in 2016 to really seed more of those programs across the state so people could more efficiently become teachers and more inexpensively, right? Because then you wouldn't be doing a graduate year of education. How can we do it quickly? These one-year residency programs can really get people in. It's a one-year program, right? So you recruit them, you train them very intensively for the year. They're getting a stipend or tuition remission during that year, financial support. San Francisco also has some housing support that comes with the residency program. So that is a very fast and high-quality pathway into the profession. Unfortunately, while there have been a couple of bills in the past few years to bring back loan forgiveness or service scholarship programs for teachers, they have not passed nor been funded in the budget. So we don't currently have that program in California, whereas many other states do. The federal government, through the Higher Education Act, provides a little bit of funding for scholarships and loan forgiveness for teachers, but it's really not enough. And the debt burden that new teachers are entering with is huge. It's $20,000 for teachers entering with a BA.
So, Tina Sloan, you're going to get the last word. What are you hoping to see in the years coming, not only in new initiatives that we haven't talked about yet or change in this problem?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm hoping to see is that we're really going to invest in helping people become teachers so that we don't get to this place again where we have a teacher shortage. We knew it was coming. And we didn't invest in it. And our high-performing countries, Finland and Singapore and many of the Scandinavian countries come to mind, they actually, not only do they pay for the education of their teachers going into the profession, they actually pay them oftentimes a stipend or even a teacher's salary while they're learning to become teachers. The loan forgiveness program did this in a sense. It really supported teachers to be able to do programs. Look, we have many very high quality 1 year graduate programs to become a teacher. They're full time high quality programs and they require the people who do them to be supported to do them. Otherwise, it's very difficult to support them. We actually in this country have a disincentive to get high quality support, to be fully prepared before you go into the profession. And it's why we're finding ourselves now sort of scrambling to just put people in classrooms. And even when they're not prepared yet in the beginning, we're doing our best, but we can do much better.
All right. Well, we're going to have to stop it there. No problem. So that's City Visions for this evening. I want to thank my guests, Tara Kinney of the Learning Policy Institute, Daniel Menezes of the San Francisco Unified School District, Tina Sloan of the Gerbitz Graduate School of Education at UC Santa Barbara. Thanks to all of you for joining me this evening.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And for a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at klw.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Wendy Holcomb. Join me next Monday as we discuss San Francisco's challenges with reaching its goals of recycling. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.
Saw firsthand the